I'm Donna Edwards. Thank you for joining us today on Woman to Woman, Let's Talk Leadership. As a woman of color and former member of Congress, I'm talking with women leaders at every level. What inspires them? What motivates them? What makes today's leaders lead? And currently, I'm a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice, and I'm grateful for their support in the production of this series. You can find more about our work online at brennancenter.org. That's BRENNANcenter.org. And we'll be posting our programs on iTunes, on YouTube, on the multimedia section of our website. There is almost no way to miss us. Our hope is to inspire people of all backgrounds, especially women, to take on leadership roles in their communities. Joining me today in studio, and I am so excited about that, right here in the nation's capital, is Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Leighton from Florida's 27th Congressional District. And that means that she represents Miami and the surrounding areas. But Congresswoman Ross-Leighton was born in Havana, Cuba, and her family actually fled from Cuba following Fidel Castro's revolution and settled permanently in Miami. After earning an Associate of Arts degree from Miami-Dade Community College, Ileana went on to receive a bachelor's and master's degree in education from Florida International University, and eventually a doctorate in education from University of Miami. And I feel like I got to call her Congresswoman, friend, Dr. Ross-Leighton. Thank you so much for joining us
Donna,
today.
Donna, thank you so much. I am so proud of the work that you're doing here with the Brennan Center. I'm so glad to see you. And I'm sure that there is life after Congress because you look tremendous. And as you know, I announced that I'm not running for re-election. So I'm looking at... What in the world does one do? Because I'm not in the type to sit by the pool and have a margarita.
Well, maybe for a week, Illy, but I can tell you, you'll want something to do. And so that's why I'm really glad
this
that you're joining us.
This is such a great project. Congratulations.
Thank
really.
You.
It's wonderful. But the way you introduced me, you did not say that the way that we really know each other is because your host, that Donna Edwards here in front of me, was our star catcher in the congressional softball game that the women members of Congress have, bipartisan, bicameral, against members of the press. The only catch is that the members of the press are about 25 years old. That's the average. And maybe the lady members were not quite at that level.
Well, but I know. But we won a couple of times. And you bring up a really good point, Ileana, because what a lot of people don't know about being a member of Congress, it's not all of the push-pull fighting all the time that people think they see on television. And that was one way in which we could develop relationships both across to the other side of the Capitol in the House of Lords, but also with our fellow colleagues in the House of Representatives.
And that's so important, Donna. You know, I was in Congress for a long, long time, almost 30 years. And I remember when I first got here, compromise was not a dirty word, and the folks from the other side of the aisle were not opponents. They were worthy adversaries, and you're in a battle of ideas. But now, I don't know, we've sunk so low, and everything is so acrimonious, and that's a shame. And our softball game was a way, as you pointed out, of reaching across and seeing ourselves as human beings and not as representatives of a particular party. So it brings out the humanness in us, and I think that the civility has been downgraded so much these days from the White House on down, and it's just we've got to go a little bit higher, aim higher, and treat each other with a little more respect.
Well, you know, Illy, when I read about your pending departure from the Congress, one, I thought, yes, there is life after Congress, but I thought, what a great loss, because you know, you're the first Hispanic woman to serve in the United States House of Representatives. I didn't even know that, I think, when we served. But today there are 10 Latinas in the Congress. Is that right?
It's so wonderful. And I didn't even know when I got elected, Donna, that I was going to be the first. I was doing an interview with Katie Couric, and it was a very controversial election. Glad that's over. And she said, how does it feel to be the first Latina elected to Congress? And I said, well, Katie, it's an honor to be in Congress, but I don't wish to correct you, but I don't really think I'm the first Hispanic woman yet. And she said, oh, yeah, we've done our research. You are. I was just so surprised that it had taken us so long.
To get a first.
To get a first, September 1989. And so now, as you point out, we have a dozen wonderful members of Latina members and their leaders and in their community and here in Congress. So diversity is good. It's good for America. It's good for Congress. We have a long ways to go, but it's getting better all the time.
Well, and you came in and amazingly, I mean, you served on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, which I also think was a good get for a woman, and you moved up in the ranks in leadership. And it is not often, frankly, even in the Congress, where women get to play that kind of leadership role, especially in international affairs. And so share a little bit with us about what that means.
Well, you're so right. In fact, I'm only one of two Republican women on our committee. And before Ann Wagner of Missouri was appointed, I was the only one, the only female Republican on our committee. And foreign affairs, you can imagine, we do such important work in terms of Iran sanctions and look at North Korea and its belligerent behavior and to help our allies. And I think diversity is good in all areas. We need more women in important committees. We need more more minorities, more blacks, more everything, because this has been a good old boys club for a long, long time. And when I got elected in September of 89, women were just not represented in those key committees. It has changed a lot. And now we've got Nita Lowey and Kay Granger, lots of great women as appropriators leading very important subcommittees and full committees. So we've come a long ways. But boy, we need more, and we need women to step up also. Sometimes we're our own worst enemies. We think that, oh, I'm not ready yet. I don't know enough. I don't have the money. And so we hold ourselves back. And I'm always ready to push women out and say, come on, now is the time. Don't wait for that perfect opportunity. That may never come. When is it a perfect time to get married? When is it a perfect time to have a baby? When is it a perfect time to find a new job? The time is now. Don't wait for that perfect time.
Well, and many of us say, well, one, don't wait. We don't wait, and we just do it. You know, I think about your time in service in the Congress, and one of the things that really inspires me is that you came in, you said, I'm an equal partner here, and, you know, found your place in the Congress, and you've been such a leader. And so when I think about, well, what makes a leader? So tell us a little bit about your background, what informs your leadership, why it is that, and you have such an amazing personality. I mean, if you ever feel down, go sit next to Ileana Ross-Layton and she will make you feel up.
Well, you are nice to say that. But, you know, a long time ago, I made up my mind that God gives you 24 hours every day. What a wonderful gift. And you can go through those hours grumpy and grouchy, and there's always something to be mad about every minute of the day. But plan it out. Don't be mad every day, all the time. And I chose happiness. And sometimes if you you can make yourself happy. I mean, people who are listening in, maybe they're in difficult situations. You know, so many single moms, and they're getting by in low-paying jobs, and they think that nobody's there to help them out, and they don't have that family structure where somebody else can take care of the child while she goes to work or goes back to school. I mean, there's a lot of sadness in our society, but each one of us can be a leader in our community by volunteering, by helping somebody out, working, you know, volunteering in the hospital or in a daycare center. Every office needs volunteers. I know we have a wonderful internship program, and we're always looking for good leaders. But to me, Donna, my parents were wonderful role models, and they taught me to be leaders. Why do I say that? Because as you pointed out in your introduction, we had to leave everything behind in Cuba and came over here in August of 1960 with one little suitcase between us all, because we thought that would be a revolution that would last maybe a week. We even came on a round trip ticket on Pan Am, and we thought we'd be back to Cuba in no time. But the days turned into weeks and months and years and, you know, decades. And But my parents never looked back. They kept the fight against Castro, but my dad, who was a university graduate in Havana, he came to the United States and said, you know, education is the key to success. He worked two full-time jobs and went to Miami-Dade Community College, graduated, went to the University of Miami with his limited English skills, and he was such a great role model. And my mom, what did she do? She took the bus to go to Miami Beach and worked in a Miami Beach hotel, putting the trays of desserts ready for the snowbirds to come down. And she was working two jobs as well. What great role models. And they were leaders in our family. They were leaders in our community because they had faith that this country had given them the best gift of all, to have freedom. And for them to work, that's a wonderful luxury. And they taught me that there's dignity in all work. And they were just wonderful role models for me.
Well, what an amazing story. And I think sometimes, you know, when you're in Congress and people see you, they don't think you have like another life, that somehow you just miraculously became a congresswoman. And what you shared with us is a way in which your parents really guided you. And those were, you know, kind of your first set of leaders. How did you grow up in Miami?
So we grew up in the Little Havana section, and our house was not a flop house, but it was a house where a lot of people would stay because Cubans were coming to the United States. Oh, my goodness, hundreds and hundreds all the time. And people didn't have any money and they didn't have jobs. So our house was kind of like a refuge. We didn't own the house. We rented it with other families. But it was a good environment for us to grow up in. And then, you know, I'm just a Miami hometown gal. I went to school there and graduated from all the schools that you mentioned. And we learned that freedom is the best thing that this country has going for it. And we take sometimes these great gifts from God for granted, but in all parts of the world, and I know in my work in the committee, I see what's going on in Syria and what's going on, in such terrible places where children are growing up and in really difficult situations. Yemen is another place where there's just a lot of suffering. And we have to give thanks to God for what we have, that we have freedom and we have opportunity here. Even those of you who are listening in, maybe you're in a difficult place right now in your life, but you know that there's hope and that there's a tomorrow and that your life can improve.
Well, you know, you mentioned something. So you've, of course, in your service in the Congress on Foreign Affairs Committee, you've also had the opportunity as a member of Congress to travel around the world, to meet with foreign leaders, to talk about the United States and our position in the world. And there are some people who think members of Congress shouldn't travel at all. And I want you to share with us what it means to travel both in a bipartisan way, but also representing the interests of the United States.
Oh, it's so important. I know that there's a lot of controversy about trips abroad, but I remember one particular trip that I took with Steny Hoyer from your home state of Maryland, and we went to Sudan. And we went to other places. We visited Darfur. At that time, there was such great poverty and malnourishment, and kids were starving to death and lack of medical care. And it's good for us to understand how U.S. foreign policy can have an impact in those countries. And there's so many evil regimes all over the world, and we've got to help our allies, identify our adversaries and sanction them, but help those folks have a better life. And in my other life pre-Congress, I was a teacher. And so to me, taking these trips abroad is like being a teacher, where I get to learn new things from my students. It's not just me giving a lesson, but if you're a good teacher, you learn a lot from your students as well. And that's how I got started in politics, being a teacher, having my own school, helping the families in my school. And somebody told me, you know, you, instead of just helping two or three people, you could run for office yourself. And Donna, I had never given that a second thought. Never in the world did I ever consider running for office. We had no elected officials in my family. I had never even participated in a political campaign. I was really not political at all in junior high or high school or in college, did not participate in those kinds of activities. And yet here I am, retiring from Congress after almost 30 years.
Oh, my
Who'd
goodness.
Who'd have
thunk it? I mean, you know, it's so amazing that you mentioned that because, you know, we've been talking with a lot of different leaders here on Woman to Woman, and everybody takes a different pathway. There you were in a classroom. What made you decide that you wanted to run for Congress?
Well, I'm still thinking back. What was that moment? And it was just really somebody who'd said to me, you know, you're helping this person who doesn't understand English. This was in a working class neighborhood of Miami-Dade County called Hialeah, very blue-collar town. And the people were not proficient in English. And so I would be translating documents for them and helping them out. And that person said, you know, you should consider running for office because you could shape a lot of laws and help a lot of people. And I said, running for office? I mean, it was just like if somebody tells me you could be a nuclear physicist. I mean, it didn't ever enter my mind. Or you could, you know, you could do the Tour de France on a bicycle. I mean, of course I can't. But they said, yeah. And I volunteered in someone's campaign to see what it's like. And I liked it, and I thought, hey, this is kind of fun. Not only are you doing important work, but it's kind of fun, too. And so when I go to schools, I encourage young ladies especially to think about serving in an elective position, not just being the assistant, which is very important as well, but running yourself. Put yourself out there to make sure that you have an important point of view and that nobody has expressed it quite right like you. And there's only one you. You do it.
Wow, Illy, you know what? I love this because, you know, I've heard from some young women, first of all, that it takes, I don't know, something like 7 or 8 times before you ask a woman to run that she decides to run.
That's interesting.
Isn't that
amazing?
Wow,
that is amazing.
But the thing is, what you demonstrated in your own story is that, you know, there is no pathway. You don't have to be in student government and then run for this and run for that and run for that and then finally run for
Congress. I wish I had poo-poo that.
I did, and you know what? It's a good pathway, but it's not the only one.
It's not the only one. But it just had never entered my mind to run for office during high school or in college. It was just, you know, as if somebody said, let's hike the Appalachian Trail. I mean, it just doesn't come to mind. I'm just not made that way. But I've loved it. And I've served 7 years in the Florida legislature, 4 years in the State House, 3 years in the Senate, and now almost 30 years in Congress. So it's been my life for a long, long time, in addition to being a teacher. And you're right. Every path is different. And the path that you take is the correct path. Nobody can make that path for you. But start it in your community. Become involved in your community. That's the way to get around, to get some experience. Help another person. Become a volunteer, whether it's Big Brothers, Big Sisters. There's so many good groups. And improve your community. You get to meet other people. And you can get advice from even a rascal. And everybody can give you some advice as to what to do or what not to do. I find that you get good advice and good experiences, whatever you do.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, a bit because, especially with women members of Congress. Now, on the Republican side, I think there are maybe 22 Republican women in the Congress.
Oof, that's
we could
a
use
low
some more.
Number.
I know we need some more. Well, what are you going to do about that?
Well, the first thing you need to do is to invite the members of our bipartisan congressional softball team to come here and be a guest. On the Senate side, we have Shelley Moore Capito. On the House side, we have Martha Roby, and I can't even remember.
You're
how
naming
many,
like the star athletes.
Yes, and I'm not in that team. And Kristen Gillibrand, and there were just such great players. And so you have a roster right there to start with. And I bet you that you're right. Each and every one of us has taken a different path to leadership, but every path is important.
Yeah, I was you know, thinking when I came into the Congress, I came in a special election, and I'm going to tell you one thing that you don't know.
Tell me.
You are in the office that I occupied when I first came to Congress.
No.
Looking out at the Capitol. Yes, you
wow.
are.
Wow. Well, that is a good luck office.
Well, it really is, and you only get that with leadership. I got it by accident because I came in a special election.
Tell me
election.
How you got. Well, tell me the election. How did you come in a special election?
Well, no.
So what had happened?
I beat a longtime Democrat, one of your colleagues. We won't mention his name. But because of that, of course, you know, you get to come into the office that they occupy. And it was your office.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember when you moved in, I said, man, she's getting a really good view right of the Capitol.
But you know what's interesting? That back in the old days, meaning when I first got here, they did not do that. Claude Pepper was a longtime member of Congress, years and years and years. And so he had, and he was the chairman of the Rules Committee. So he had a terrific palace of an office. And when I got elected in a special election, they put us in a little cubby hole in Cannon. And then about 10 doors down was the other part of our cubby hole of an office. So not everybody gets to replace the office of your predecessor.
Well, I'll tell you. So I know that you have a good one. And I know there's somebody probably already stalking it.
You bet they are.
So, you know, I was thinking as you're approaching your time leaving, you know, you get to think about things like where you want your papers and your archives to be.
I haven't thought one thought about what I'm going to do or even the papers. I have no idea. What did you do, Donna Edwards?
Well, you know what? I left them with my former law school up in New Hampshire and my University of New Hampshire Law School, and my undergraduate school at Wake Forest University. And
oh,
so
Wake
you get
Forest,
a choice.
So beautiful, yes.
Right, you get a choice so you about get, that.
Well, that is great to know. And so you... When you mean your papers, what is it that you mean?
You organize your legislation, the things that were
your priorities. Like our committee hearings,
etc. 30 years, and as a woman who served in leadership, you will have a real opportunity to leave some really
good information. That is good to know. Okay. No, I have not even thought about it. I said, wait till I retire, then I'll think about it.
Well,
but I'll start organizing now then.
Start organizing now. And, you know, the beauty of that, of course, is... you know, having served on the Foreign Affairs Committee, you have a wealth of information to share about how it is that we've made foreign policy over the decades. What have been some of your priorities since you've been in Congress?
Well, I have always helped the areas that are around in my geographical area. The Caribbean nations are often overlooked. We're paying a lot of attention now because of the hurricanes that have wrecked a lot of that landmass. But Haiti, for me, has been a big concern, mm-hmm. and a concern that I share with my South Florida colleagues, Frederica Wilson, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Mario Diaz-Balart, and Carlos Grubello, Alcee Hastings, Ted Deutsch, and Lois Frankel. That's our South Florida delegation. And we've been very involved in helping Haiti recover from just terrible natural disasters, whether it's earthquakes or hurricanes. Poor Haiti seems to bear the brunt of it. Helping Puerto Rico now recover from Hurricane Maria takes up a lot of our time. And we're having a lot of Puerto Ricans move into Florida. So it's our gain to get some good people and get our population numbers up. And because we passed New York these past years as the third most populous state. So it's California, Texas, and it used to be New York and Florida, but now it's Florida as number three. And maybe with some more Puerto Ricans, we'll be number two. But we have a lot of opportunities to get involved with in foreign affairs with Israel, too, because we have a growing Jewish population in Florida. And so I'm very involved in helping our strong ally, the Democratic Jewish State of Israel. So in terms of foreign affairs, that takes up a lot of my time. In Cuba, also, I was born in Cuba, as you pointed out. We have most of the constituents of my district moved to who are in Miami. They've come from Cuba, but an increasing number have come from Venezuela, where we've had Nicolas Maduro ruling over people with an iron fist, and they're fleeing that dictatorship. And we have a growing number of Colombians and Nicaraguans. And so Miami is a sort of a potluck and a great diverse state of people coming from everywhere. And we have low taxes. So if you're thinking of relocating, Donna, come down to Florida. We will take you.
So you're going to head the tourist bureau, too, I guess.
I think so. I'm a proud Floridian, and we need to get people to know that we have recovered from the hurricane, that we're open for business, that Florida beaches are still as beautiful, The Keys, Donna, took a really hard, direct hit. And they're still suffering because even if the hotels are open, what has happened is that the workers of the hotel cannot afford to live in the Keys because housing has gone up so much. So the hotels and the restaurants are struggling because of unaffordable housing in the Keys. So we've got to make the Keys affordable again for everyone. But come on down, the water is fine.
Well, you know, people think sometimes that members of Congress are, you know, talking about these issues that are at a 30,000-foot level. And what you've just demonstrated, of course, is that people live their lives on the ground. And it's important for a member of Congress to be in touch with those issues. You know, I was looking back on your background, and one of the things that really intrigued me was I wondered whether your experience as an immigrant has helped you in terms of the way you think about immigration policy and what this nation's immigration policy should be.
That is an excellent question, and the answer is you bet it has, because I'm very much in favor of comprehensive immigration reform, so much in favor of helping the Dreamers. At least that group of people deserve to be here because they came to the United States as children. They came with their parents. They weren't even able to say yes or no, and here they are. And some people say, they should go back to where they came from. As more often the case, they don't even know their supposedly home country. Some of them, a lot of them, don't even speak the language. People assume that if you have dark hair and dark skin that, you know how to speak Spanish. Most of these kids don't know how to speak Spanish. There is American as apple pie. They just don't have the papers to show for it. I'm optimistic that Speaker Ryan had said to a very conservative group here in Capitol Hill this week that he will put the saving of the Dreamers in a big budget bill. So I'm optimistic we'll finally be able to pass a legislation to permanently help the Dreamers. And I want to help other people as well. I'm for extending TPS, temporary protected status, to Haitians, to Nicaraguans, to Salvadorans, anybody who's been hit by natural disasters. These are wonderful people who want to work here legally, and they are very important to their home country. Why? Because they send remittances to Haiti and to Nicaragua. And in fact, for Haiti, for example, that's a big chunk of Haiti's economy is dependent upon these remittances. So we had a big Haitian lobbying day yesterday, and a lot of Haitian Americans came to our offices, and we're getting more support for extending TPS for Haitians, and I hope that we're able to do it. So my being an immigrant has definitely shaped the way I look at immigration, because this country opened its arms to me, and I think it's unfair for me to say, I was allowed in, and now nobody else should come because I'm so special. I'm just like everyone else, and this is a generous country. I think we need security at the borders, but we're getting so much better at that. And we have to show compassion to those who are already here.
Well, you know, it's so challenging the way you laid it out, too, and both of what the opportunities are and, you know, really the great things that are brought to us by our immigrant populations. I mean, it's a real bonus for the United States. Does it become difficult, though, to travel within the party, given the direction sometimes of your party on these issues?
I'm bothered by it mightily. It's really true. And, you know, as we're recording this, I'm looking at all these headlines about the tweet war between President Trump and Jeff Flake and John McCain. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, it's so uncivil. And I think that I belong more to the Ronald Reagan part of the Republican Party. And there's a lot of us still around, the Jeb Bush part, where they have a compassionate public servant's heart. And I'm not one that tries to be uncivil. And If you don't do right by me, I'm not going to be civil to you. But I'm no lackey. But by and large, people are pretty nice, and you want to treat them with respect, especially as you're going up, because you're going to meet them as you're going down. And I think our party has been too strident lately. I wish that we could do more to bring in millennials into our party, to bring in gays into our party, to bring in minorities, blacks, women. You know, there's so much more that we could do. Instead, we show them every day why we're not their party. And if we want to grow and be a big player in shaping the message, economics or foreign policy, we need to be more inclusive, and we need to let people know that we want them in our party, and that it's a party of different ideas. It's not a cookie cutter party.
Well, you know, I'm so glad that you shared that with us, Ileana, because I think sometimes our listening public and our constituents, even you know, out in districts, really don't hear that message coming out of Washington. And I think that they can feel a bit frustrated about that.
I absolutely agree, because I'm looking at all these the subtitles there on MSNBC and CNN and Fox. You have them both, all three on. And it's so, oh my gosh, it's just so so nasty. And I know, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And they want the little war of words between everybody. But we could do better.
But as you've said, when you came into Congress in 1989, you've been able to see over the last three decades that kind of transition. And if you think about your service, think about some of the big issues that you worked on that absolutely required bipartisan support in order to get through Congress.
Well, our best jobs are always when they are done in a bipartisan level, because you want somebody to come in and improve your work product. If you have this pride of authorship and you don't want anyone to touch your bill because it's just perfect the way it is, then you're just not doing your job. We get better when we collaborate with others, when we cooperate, when we work together, and to hear another person's point of view. And everybody can give us good ideas. Even people you disagree with, maybe they'll have a different way of looking at it. And you say, you know, I never thought about it that way. And I hope that we become better for it.
Well, Ileana Ross-Leighton, from Florida.
Well, Donna Edwards.
Yes, it was a pleasure to serve with you in the Congress.
I love you, amiga.
I love you, amiga. And it's a delight to have you here in studio with us. Listen, I'm Donna Edwards. I've been joined today by Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Leighton, who is retiring after 30 years in the United States House of Representatives.
I'm following you.
And you'll have a good time doing it. This is the Brennan Center for Justice production of Woman to Woman. Let's Talk Leadership. Thank you so much for joining us.
Donna, you are a natural.